Welcome to Career Tools. This week, we are replaying a podcast that you may have heard on the Manager Tools feed. So if you already heard it, then you can skip this one. Otherwise, please do listen. It's an interview with Maggie Tucker, who is from the FIRE podcast. FIRE stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. And she talks about how her finances and finances of her directs affect her work, her ability to progress in her career, and some ideas for how you might make yourself a little bit more financially independent. It's so valuable that we wanted to play it for you guys too. So in this cast, you'll hear Mark and Maggie, and I'll let them take it away.
Welcome to Manager Tools. This week, we have a special guest, I think maybe our fifth guest ever in the 17-year history of Manager Tools, which tells you something about how much we respect, admire, and like Maggie Tucker, who is about to retire. Maggie has been a client of ours for a number of years. We became friends when she shared with me about her ability to gain financial independence. And she has a podcast called Friends on Fire. FIRE is an acronym meaning Financial Independence Retire Early. And she said something to me the other day that was just astounding. And I should have known it. And of course I didn't. That's what smart people who are smarter than me are always telling me stuff I should have known. And she said, financial security makes you a better employee. And it just was like my head went boom. So we're going to spend some time talking about that because Manager Tools wants you to have great relationships with your people. And we want your people to be fully productive. And financial concerns and worries and debt and all those other things take away from that. And while we certainly wouldn't suggest that managers should be managing the personal lives of their directs, you can set an example, you can have communications. And Maggie's been talking about this for years. And so I don't need to do it. We're going to go right to the experts. So Maggie Tucker, welcome to Manager Tools.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm incredibly honored. Because as you said, you don't have guests on a lot.
We don't.
And I've been a Manager Tools client for more than a few years. I mean,
really?
Well over a decade.
Oh my.
Maybe 15 years, I want to say. Somewhere in the 13 to 15.
So you got to us early.
I did.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And so Maggie, take a minute, introduce yourself relative to your career and also what's coming up in your career.
Sure. So I don't think you said my age, so I'll share my age. I'm 41. And I am retiring in about a month and a half, which is crazy to say out loud. It's starting to feel more and more real. And that's retiring after 20 years working in corporate America and, you know, 7+ years before. I mean, I've had a job since I was old enough to be, before I was old enough to be employed, honestly. And I've been working very hard and through college and I've not stopped. And so this is a massive life shift for myself and my husband, who is actually retiring on the same day.
On the same day.
With me, yes.
Yeah, okay. And in the last 5 years, what has your career, what have you been doing?
So I work for a large hotel company that is global and has hotels all around the world. And my whole career has really been in digital and marketing and leadership. And I've held a number of different roles. But really in the last, 3 to 5 years, I've held larger leadership positions leading parts of our digital business. And more recently, for the past year and a half, I shifted into what's a, quote, part-time role. It's 80%, so some people wouldn't consider that fully part-time. But it was on my way. I was pretty vocal about kind of the shift I was looking to make over the last few years. So it was a step towards me eventually working my way out of the organization. But I've held a mix of roles in the leadership and digital space, and more recently, kind of in marketing strategy space.
Yes. So help a guy who's not really good with digital and not really good with marketing. When people say digital marketing today, what do they mean?
Well, they could mean a lot of different things. That's a good question. For example, our digital marketing team is hundreds of people. So they could mean anything from buying paid search to managing natural search or SEO,
right?
To, and which I did for, part of my career, to the actual website management and the content on the website and the photography on the website, which is a lot of the types of teams I manage for the end, to email marketing. I mean, there's literally, 30 different niches within digital marketing. But, and that's where over the years, as I grew in my leadership roles, I was managing large teams that were managing different aspects of those different marketing touch points and of our website. And so you're dealing with everything from the strategy of where we're going and what technologies we're using. And there's a ton, there's so more technologies than you could imagine out there, which is a lot of the strategic decisions you're making. But then you're dealing with all the like day-to-day operations. So think about like when COVID hit, all of a sudden someone's like, get every photo off of our website that has a throw pillow on it or that shows people not wearing masks.
Why no throw pillows?
Because nobody wanted to think about anything that was not washable. So you don't want, like when everything went, you know, in the very beginning of COVID and everything got, you know, just everyone was concerned and we didn't know how serious this was, people were dying. You didn't want to think about anything that couldn't be washed. And so you walk into a hotel room, half the things in a hotel room can't be washed. It's a decorative throw pillow. And so,
oh my,
there's little things like that. And it just, and I use that as an example of like, there's a lot of operational day-to-day. There's natural disasters all over the world every day. We've got to put up travel advisories about those. We've got to change them when something, when a hotel closes, or when something, you know, temporarily happens at a hotel, we've got to put up messaging around that. So there's a lot of like day-to-day operational issues of, you know, things that break and content we've got to get up or down or translations. And
fascinating. I could spend an hour asking you like, how many emails does a worldwide hotel chain send out every day? But I'm not going to, because that's not what we're here to talk about. Yeah. A big number, no doubt. Okay. So let's start with that core idea that you shared with me that just blew my mind, which is how financial security makes you a better employee. And if I recall correctly, when you first shared that with me, you were relaying a story that you were sharing that with somebody internally, or somebody had said to you that you were quite candid in meetings. You had an authenticity it came to that person. I'm not suggesting you were feeling this. That person, I think, used the word fearless, you know, and the sort of the speaking truth to power. And it turned into a conversation about financial security. So talk about that.
Yeah, it's funny. I think the story I might have been relaying, which I won't go too far into, but was somebody after an offsite, and I had one drink at this point, asked me how they were asking for career advice and around my authenticity and my leadership style and all these other things. And I immediately went into a discussion about financial things because I was trying to make the connection. I may not have been making it really well at the point, but I was trying to make that connection of like, the reason I am the way I am and I'm not afraid to be the way I am is because I have financial security. So I'm not, and that was even, you know, there's different levels of financial security. It doesn't necessarily mean you're able to quit your job and never work again, but you're certainly not stressed about how you're going to pay your mortgage for the next few years.
Getting
into how I think financial security makes you a better employee, I'll start with the opposite of it, which is when you are operating from a place of constant stress about how you're going to, you know, about your next paycheck coming in and you're living, quote, paycheck to paycheck, and you're thinking about how you're going to pay your mortgage next month or whatever, you do things for the wrong reasons. You know, you're just stressed, which doesn't help anyone operate.
Literally every day, that kind of stress decreases your effectiveness at work. Yeah.
Completely.
And every time you're thinking about your mortgage, you're not thinking about work.
Yeah. And I think it slowly, you may not realize that it has any connection to work, but it erodes a part of you. It eats away at you and you're not able to be as present and engaged and, you know, a lot of things. But, you know, I just go back to like doing things for the right reasons. So I think about, you know, I work in a large global highly matrixed organization that is super complex and nobody is in charge of one thing, right? I need to have a large amount of influence to get anything done. And to influence people, you've got to have good relationships. You're constantly, you know, bartering and trading and, you know, figuring out how to make something happen and what's going to make that person happy. And how do I say this in terms that they'll listen to me? And when you're doing that, and I think about, you know, all of the different initiatives and projects I've been a part of in the company over the years, I have a good reputation. I think this is fair to say, or I think I have a good reputation for doing the right thing for the company and for people, depending on, you know, what the situation is, not for, you know, making my fiefdom bigger or trying. And there's a lot of people who have a bad reputation for, I don't say a lot of people, there are people who become known as like, they're just worried about themselves, right? They're worried about their team, they don't see the bigger picture. We use the term enterprise mindset a lot. They're not taking an enterprise mindset. And, you know, I always think, you know, when you have financial security, you're focused on yourself. You're just worrying about yourself. You're not worrying about, well, how come that person got a promotion? Like, you're happy and you're intrinsically, you know, good with where you're at. Mm-hmm. You don't get caught up in office politics. You do things for the right reason. You lead with a level of confidence and authenticity that might mean different things to different people. So some of my authenticity is, I'm not the best dressed person in my office. I like to be comfortable. I'm serious. Like, I like to be comfortable. So I work on a digital team too. So that happens to influence people in a positive way, because it tends to be a younger crowd. Yeah. And, you know, they don't want to wear a suit to work every day. And so they like seeing someone like me dressing a little bit more casually.
So help me with some context there. What's your title? And I don't have much in the company, but what's your title today? You a VP?
Yeah, I'm a vice president.
Okay, you're a vice president. So what are other VPs wearing at work?
I'll tell you, I'm one of the most casually dressed VPs in our company. I like to think I'm towing the line on, I mean, I'm still dressed appropriately for work.
Okay. You're not talking about sweats or anything like that in the office?
No, I mean, ever since we've been working from home, perhaps, yeah. But no, I would never wear sweats to the office.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm a little bit more, you know, I don't wear heels. I wear flats. Now I wear dressy flats, but 90% of women are walking around in heels, and heels are really, you may not know this, Mark, but heels are really uncomfortable.
I do know that. Every woman I've ever known says they're really uncomfortable. Yes.
And so that might feel like a silly example, but I am who I am. I sometimes say things I probably, you know, I'm overly transparent at times.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not inappropriate in the things that I would share with people, but I'm very transparent and authentic in what I'll tell people and how I'll walk people through, you know, how decisions are made around performance ratings and things like that. Like, I'm an open book.
And would you say 20 years ago, or let's say 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you were 21, and none of us knew anything when we were 21.
Yeah.
So 15 years ago, can you contrast the feeling you have in your head now about your being at peace, my phrase, with your financial situation? Can you contrast that with the way you felt 15 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely different. Now, some of it is just what comes with more experience and wisdom. Like, you and I, when you came on our podcast, we talked a lot about that, right? You think, you know, I think I know a lot at 41. I know when I'm 51, I'm going to know way more. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so you never fully, I try to appreciate that I don't know everything, but yes, a lot of what has changed has just been more experience and more wisdom that comes with that. But no, I do, a lot of it, I do think, you know, when I look back at the things the way I acted and the things I would do, you know, I very much, you know, 10, 15 years ago was trying to do everything I thought I was supposed to do to fit in and to be a certain way to be successful.
Yeah.
And some of that eroded my work-life balance. Also, I gave 200% of myself when I only had to give 125 to be successful, and I could be a little bit more sane by doing a little bit less. And so, you know, there's things like that that as my confidence has increased, it's not like my authenticity, I would say, changed a lot,
right,
but my confidence has increased to be myself.
Yeah.
And to not be afraid to say, hey, look, I just can't make that thing because I committed to do something at my daughter's school that day.
Right.
And 10 years ago, I would have canceled whatever that personal commitment was, and I would have put work 100% first. And I did.
Yeah. And do you every once in a while catch yourself being reminded, I am so glad that I am financially secure? Because at any given time, if things go really, really bad, I can walk away from this and have no regrets about
every single day. Right? I mean, we just went through, it was literally every day. And I just think about, you know, the last couple of years in COVID, and I work in the travel industry. There was so much happening. There were people who I remember when it really first hit, and it was still so new and we didn't really know what was going on. But we were all afraid. Everybody was afraid of their jobs. I mean, I don't mean to say this to sound like cocky or anything. I was not afraid of my job, of losing my job.
Right.
You know, I was worried for the company and the world, right? And I wanted us to get through this. But I was like, you know, I'm going to be fine no matter what happens. And I want to figure out, you know, what the right path is. And I, you know, one thing, just back to like the financial security and how it makes you a better employee. When we're debating things at work, which we're often debating things at work and, you know, trying to figure out where we're going to land on something, I will frequently use the phrase, I don't care, but I always have to preface it to clarify. I don't mean I don't care. You know, like I care how this thing comes out, but like, look, I'm here, I'm presenting you three options and paths, and I'm telling you the trade-offs associated with each of them. Ultimately, like if you want to choose, like, I'll tell you, I believe we should go with option B, but if you choose option A and I work for you, I'm like, I don't care. That's right. Fine. At some point, just tell me what you want to do. My job is to give you the information
right.
and educate you and give you my point of view. There are people who get so caught up in what they think is the right way that they get so bent out of shape when somebody doesn't want to go with what they're suggesting. And that's why I say, I don't care. I'm like, I don't care. It's no skin off my back. I'm here to do a job. You're here to do your job. And this, using this example, I work for you. And so if you disagree with me, like it's my job to like,
I get it. Yeah. I respect
move on
that.
And, yeah. Yeah. And I think the financial security gives me that level of confidence to not get overly caught up in a lot of things that I think people get caught up in that doesn't improve their ability to be effective at work.
Yeah. Folks, it's Mark here. Another reminder, if you're not already a licensee, I encourage you to become one. Licenses unlock all kinds of value for us. The whole purpose of Manager Tools and Career Tools and Executive Tools was to reach you, individuals, to not go after big corporate clients, because ultimately the behaviors everybody wants to change are ours, the individuals. So that's why we talk directly to you. And the primary way we power our business is through licenses. The reason the podcasts are free is because we sell licenses, and that allows us to pay for the hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of server and IT time it takes to house all of our nearly 18 years worth of podcasts. So please become a licensee. You'll get all kinds of access. Interviewing series is probably the biggest one. That's what everybody talks about. Come to the website, sign up, become a licensee. It's only $200 a year. It's worth it. Okay, good. Let's talk about financial freedom, financial independence. I was on your podcast, Friends on Fire, financial independence, retire early. And you shared with me before we recorded this that you wanted to talk more about the front side, that FIRE doesn't necessarily mean you have to decide that you are going to retire early. You could continue to work if you wanted to, but having that freedom gives you advantages just like you shared. So talk a little bit about what you did. And I will tell you, I'm going to poke you on this a little bit, because when I was on your cast, my favorite part of the cast was when you were telling me some of the things you did to save money. And it was another moment where my head just exploded. I said, I could do all of those things, and I am not invested at all in doing it the way I do now. Zero. It happens to be a habit, but if I did it that way, I'd have this much more and I'd put it away. And I actually have discovered, as I've started to do some of this stuff, it makes me feel good that I'm doing something that doesn't take me any more time, takes me no more effort, and I get a dividend out of it.
Yeah.
An actual dividend. I get money.
Yeah, I like the point that it makes you feel good, because a lot of things that save you money are better for the world in many ways also. And so there's a lot of feel good that comes with it.
Yeah. So talk about financial independence.
Okay. Well, you already broke up the like two halves of FIRE, right? Some people just use the term FI, which is for financial independence. And then the RE, which is retire early. You don't have to have both, right? There's the FI half and there's the RE half. And when you put them together, it's FIRE. But, you know, a lot of people, again, I like you said, often try to focus more on the financial independence part, because it's the path to an option to retire early. Right. Or it's just the path to be happier and to have a lot of freedom and flexibility and options in your life. And again, I think, you know, the concept of being able to operate in a world where you are not stressed about money is one of the best gifts you can give yourself. And it's a great privilege too. So I don't take it lightly that I had a lot of head starts in life that even got me to a position.
Right.
I worked very hard, but I had a lot of head starts that gave me the ability to do these things. But you want me to talk about the finances of it a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've got hundreds of thousands of listeners, and a bunch of people have commented on me being on your show. So anything you can share, because I'm not the mouthpiece, you're a far smarter person about this, that you can share things that people can do. Because that's, you know, us, that's Manager Tools, right? It's not just ideas. It's like, do this.
So I think, you know, one of the biggest things people can do is shift your mindset. It's kind of one of the first steps, right? And it's one of the things you were just talking about in terms of those examples of starting to realize that there's things you could do differently that don't really have a negative impact on your life, but that have a positive impact on your finances. And so I think a lot of people say it's around like knowing your why. I like to talk about mindset more. And I read a book, I probably read this book 15 years ago. It's one of my all-time favorite books. It's called The Art of Happiness. It's written by the Dalai Lama and somebody else who wrote the book with the Dalai Lama.
Okay.
I've reread it a multitude of times. It's a great book, but it was one of the many influences, along with a lot of other Buddhist influences, that helped me realize the connection between what was actually going to bring me happiness and what wasn't, right? And a big aha that's specifically tied to financial things is stuff, right? The idea of physical stuff was not going to bring me happiness.
No way.
And it started a shift in my life, which happened well before I even knew what FIRE was, quite honestly. I didn't even know what FIRE was till like 5 years ago about. I was always pretty frugal and I was saving a lot, which we can talk more about, but I didn't know why until more recently, or didn't know what it was all going to be leading me towards. But the idea of kind of shifting your mindset and really connecting with what truly is going to make you happy, which is different for everybody, right? Sure. Like you love to play golf.
Oh, yeah.
I own golf clubs, which is what I say when people ask me if I play golf. I own golf clubs. I own a really cute golf outfit also.
Nice. Very good.
That I could, you know, would bust out for our annual golf tournament. And, but that's not something that brings me joy. So I would never spend a bunch of money on golf clubs, but I will spend a bunch of money on a treadmill or, you know, something that I will use every day and adds value back to my life. And so it's this idea about making more intentional decisions and not sacrificing things that matter to you, but also realizing like everything probably can't matter to everybody. So you care
That's
about
good.
Golf.
Yeah.
I don't care about golf. So we're going to spend our money on different things.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's the way the world works. And so to me, just back to the mindset thing, like if you haven't yet accepted and kind of come to a realization of what does make you happy and what brings you happy, and if you are just so caught up in, like, not to use a cliche term, but the rat race of life and
getting ahead,
working, getting ahead to make more money, to get a bigger house, to get a fancier car, to do, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's great. And if that makes you happy, go for it.
Right.
You may be on this hamster wheel of life, which is you're just going to constantly be trying to, again, not always doing things for the right reasons to figure out how you get ahead, and you're going to step on people to get ahead and you don't care because you're just worried about how you're going to...
How fast your hamster wheel is going.
Yeah. Yeah. And how you're going to keep paying for this lifestyle that you've created around you. And so I think the mindset piece is really important. And then after that, the concept of FIRE is really simple. It is live on less than you make, always live below your means. And so that's harder said when... Well, in some ways, I'd say it's easier when you're younger because you've often become less accustomed to a certain lifestyle.
Right.
But also it's actually, I think, a little easier as you get older because you're likely, if you're doing well in your career, you're likely making more and more money over time, but you don't necessarily have to adjust your lifestyle. You know, there's a ton of research that supports that, you know, above a certain amount of money, which is like $70,000 or $80,000, and it's not even that much, is your happiness level will not increase.
Right. More money won't bring you. Yeah.
Yes. And so the idea is, continue to live below your means. And as you start making more money, live below your means, have a higher than average savings rate, which is this, you know, the opposite of living below your means.
Right.
And then invest that money early and often, right? That's one of my biggest regrets is I didn't invest aggressively when I was younger. I didn't really know what to do. I was overwhelmed by options. I thought I needed a financial planner.
Did you have cash to invest?
I did.
You had savings, you just didn't
pretty
put it in the market. Yeah.
Okay. I literally kept it in savings, high yield savings accounts. I don't like to think about what that money would have turned into had I invested it.
Right.
But yeah, so save early and often, even small amounts, right? A couple hundred dollars, $50 every month in the beginning, a couple hundred dollars. Eventually that's going to turn into thousands of dollars a month. And save it, low cost index funds, whatever you're comfortable with. I won't get into specific investing advice here, but the idea is invest your savings early and often.
Yeah.
And if you have kids, teach them to do this stuff now. It's what we're doing with our kids.
Okay, but you've got to give me some candy here.
Okay.
So tell me, you had shared some of the things, like, for instance, shampoo, cutting a shampoo bottle, I think, in half or something like that. And as it happens, for me, those kinds of things, I think a lot of my friends would call them life hacks, but I found them delightful just because it had never occurred to me. As I think about manager tools, anything I can do to free up cash, I'm going to do. The easiest way is to cut costs. For instance, I did this in getting ready for this. A couple of weeks ago, I went back and analyzed my grocery bill. Now, everybody's going to laugh. You probably don't care about this, but it's in service of a point. And that is, I spend about $100 a month on groceries. That's it.
$100 a month?
Yeah.
What are you eating? Are you eating out a lot?
No. See, this gets
interesting.
I'm
literally like, what are you eating?
Well, no, it's just me. And okay. So oatmeal every morning.
Okay.
Maybe beef jerky in the middle of the afternoon and a salad at night. That's all. And that stuff's cheap. Okay. Now, every once in a while, I have some graham crackers. Every once in a while, you know, I have a small glass of scotch, and I like good scotch, really good scotch.
Well, scotch wouldn't hit my grocery budget, FYI. I have a separate budget for that anyways. Yeah. So,
but look, in a year, I spend all totaled with wine that I'm giving to people as gifts at Christmas time, less than $500 in alcohol. I just don't do it. Now, every once in a while, I'll have a glass of scotch at the club with some friends after a round of golf, but I don't play golf with people all that often. And I'm going to play probably 375 rounds of golf this year, and I will play 340 of them alone. So I'm not going out drinking with my buddies after golf. My point is, it was $100. And I told that to somebody, and they thought, Mark, that's incredibly low. You should eat more food. I said, no, I don't want to, and I'm healthy. And then I decided, okay, that's an assumption that's low. That's bare bones. I changed it. I bought no less food, and I got it down to $65. And I just put the $35 that's sitting right over here as a reminder. Like, that's a third.
Yeah.
It's just a third of that budget was readily available to me, and I had no clue. Now, it took me 5 minutes to think about it, but I didn't have any problem. And I'm happy to have that kind of return on my thinking, if you will.
Yeah. And it can be kind of fun. I'm kind of laughing, by the way, at the $100 or the $65, because I feel like my kids eat that in like 1 hour after school in about 30 minutes or something. But no, I think I actually find it to be like a fun challenge to see how lean I can get certain things.
Yes.
And in terms of your like, give you some candy, like I cut my toothpaste containers open and I get another month and a half out of my toothpaste than if you think you've squeezed it all out. You have not. Wait till you cut that puppy open. Wait till you cut your shampoo bottle open. Wait till you cut some lotion open. And I will, here's the thing that I will, the caveat I will give people. I think that's fun. And it sounds like you do too now.
Oh, I totally do.
And I like a fun challenge. And part of me thinks it's fun because I don't like to waste things. So it's not just about the money. Like I don't like to waste resources. It wastes the plastic. I mean, it's not good for the environment. It's not good for a million things, but I just hate things going to waste. But the other thing I would say is, look, anyone who hears that, and I've heard people say stuff like this, like that cutting toothpaste open is not what is allowing me to retire early, right? It's just kind of icing on the cake. It's not that mentality is what's helping me get there. But that one thing, you know, there's a lot of people who like critique the latte factor and they're like, oh, I really want my Starbucks every day. I'm like, look, whether you get Starbucks every day, it's not going to be the thing that makes or break it.
Right.
It's when you have 20 habits like the Starbucks
20 latte habits. Yeah. Exactly. I had a similar experience. You talked about cutting the toothpaste open. I just poured water into a shampoo thing that was I thought was empty, and I'm getting way more shampoo. Another thing, we have a client, in fact, Eldon Schaefer, who's a fantastic guy. His company invented the valve on the condiment jars that allows them to be upside down in the fridge. Remember when we were kids?
Yeah, I saw him speak. Yeah.
Yeah, he's fantastic, incredible guy. But one of my indulgences is instead of using mayonnaise, I like Miracle Whip. It's a very Southern thing. I'm sure you're in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Miracle Whip.
Yeah, Miracle Whip is everywhere, all the time. It's fantastic. I didn't have it as a kid. And I thought I would buy Miracle Whip with one of Eldon's valves on it so it would be upside down. But Miracle Whip is a little too thick. You really can't thin it with water. And you've got 25, 30% of that Miracle Whip still in that jar. And so I decided to start buying Miracle Whip with the screw off top so I could get all the Miracle Whip out. And so I did, in preparation for this, I cut my Miracle Whip budget. If you look at all the Miracle Whips I bought in the last 3 years, and I have all my receipts and everything, I cut it by like 35, 40. No, it was, I cut it by 65%. Now, some of that was probably change in diet and so on. But as much as I like Miracle Whip, I love the fact that I can think about this, do it a little differently. And right now, I'm talking about saving myself $250 a month. That's $2,500 a year, roughly. Actually, it's, what, 250 times 12, so another 500. So it's 3,000, okay? Well, in 2 years, no, 3 years, so $9,000, I can go for free on my savings on a week-long golf trip to Scotland.
Yeah.
All just by doing this stuff. To me, that's retirement.
Yeah. And so that's why when I say, you know, some people look at some of those little habits and think like, oh, that's not going to, you know, change. But those little things, they add up. But more importantly, your mindset has shifted. So it's not that you're doing one of those things. You're now doing 10 of those things, right? And those 10 things, you know, mushroom into 10 other things. And it becomes a contagious kind of habit. And it becomes kind of fun. Like it is fun for me. I don't ever feel like if this feels like you are sacrificing and you are, you know, hurting yourself, I think that's different. And perhaps you should kind of revisit what really matters to you. But to me, it's fun and I enjoy it. And it's a little bit of like a, you know, side hobby.
Yeah.
Of like, I don't use paper. I haven't used paper towels in 7 or 8 years. We use cloth napkins.
Cloth napkins. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have lots of them. And sometimes when we went to Japan a couple of years ago, I made it a field trip to go to a place that I could get some really cool local like prints of cloth napkins. So I think of that trip every time I use our cloth napkins and we have lots of them. And
yeah. Folks, if I couldn't convince you to become a licensee because it costs money, and I understand you may not be in a place where you can plunk down $200. We think it's fair. We like to joke that it's Tiffany advice at Walmart prices. And I stand by that and always will. And we have a money back guarantee. I mean, we'll give your money back if you're not happy. That said, if you can't do it, we understand. What about just coming to the website and setting up a free account? It's free. And it gives you access to all kinds of things in the website that aren't presently available, like our forums, where you can ask questions of other managers that are trafficked every day, thousands of times a day, all about management and careers and so on. And you have access to other members of the staff as well. And again, it's free. We'll send you a couple of emails, nothing major, because we don't like getting spammed. So if you're not getting emails from us, if you don't have a free account, come to the website, get a free account, and unlock some value. Thanks. Okay, so this is a show about management. So we already talked about how financial security helps you be a better employee, making right decisions for the right reasons, being a better teammate, and so on. You mentioned your candor and authenticity. What about managers? What can you suggest from your experience about a manager's ability or responsibility or chance to help employees with their own financial security?
Yeah. So I'll be honest, I hadn't given this a lot of thought until you brought it up. And we started talking about doing this episode. And once I did, and like many things, I just was, you know, overflowing with ideas and thoughts on it. But I hadn't thought about it from that particular angle. And so my co-host Mike and I work together. And we became friends at work because we bonded over talking about personal finance topics. And that's why we decided to start the podcast Friends on Fire. But, you know, as a result of us both working in the same company and having that podcast and people knew about it, especially our, you know, closer friends and colleagues, we would go and have talks around the company. Like some, you know, different employee resource groups would ask us to come talk to them. Like we have a young professionals group, we have a lean in group, and we would go talk to these groups and then different departments and teams about different financial topics. So we've spent a lot of time talking to other people and people who show interest in talking about personal finance at work and benefits and all these other things. But I hadn't thought about it as like my duty to my team. until recently, right? You brought it up. And then actually my boss recently brought it up because he was asking me before I leave to share some like tips and tricks with our team of like best leveraging our company's benefits. And I was like, that's great. And so, you know, first off, I think it's a great thing to do. I think managers, when I think about my role as a manager and as a leader and the role that I've played in my employees' lives over the years, we talk about all sorts of things. I know what's going on in their family. I know, you know, I've had people that when we're doing annual goals, they're telling me one of their goals is to lose weight that year. And they want me to, you know, me to help them, help hold them accountable and talk about it when we talk. And I'm like, okay, if that's what you want, let's do it. And so I like knock donuts out of their hands when we're in the break room and stuff. Just kidding. But you know, it's funny. Over the years, I've played such a large role in people's lives and the conversations we've had as a manager of people, but I haven't necessarily initiated the financial discussions. I, you know, I have in some roundabout ways of like, you know, reminding people about the 401k match and stuff like that. But I love the concept, and I don't think in any way it's overstretching to introduce this concept. And, you know, my advice on that would be as a manager of people, that you should bring it into your conversations. You should just be thoughtful about how you do it. So approach it cautiously and respectfully. Make sure it's a conversation people want to have. There's money can trigger a lot of different feelings and emotions. Everybody came from a different financial background. You just got to be cautious about, you know, understanding, checking your own privilege, whatever it might be, but just understanding where you're coming from versus where someone else is coming from.
When I told somebody you were going to be on, and I said, we're going to talk about this, about managers being willing to broach the subject. They said, yeah, you got to be careful there because there are going to be people who have had bad bosses. We just did a manager tools cast called the previous boss rule. Your directs bring all their previous bosses to you in terms of their learnings. And usually those bosses are bad. They're not going to be as good as a manager tools manager. And he said, the problem is you start talking to people about their personal finances, they assume it's to prepare them for a layoff.
It's for a layoff.
Yeah.
Well, that is a great point because, you know, one of the things that I would say is you got to make a judgment call on the rapport you have with the person, with the team, whether you want to take an individual approach versus a group approach at first. A lot of things can be less, doesn't feel targeted when it's like at a team meeting. Like I've talked about financial stuff at team meetings all the time. I'm like, it's this time of year. Make sure you're doing your 401k match. It's benefits time. Don't forget to enroll in your benefits. If you don't understand your benefits and you want to talk about it, like feel free to reach out to me. And so I think the place that I would start that makes it more appropriate and I think opens the door to everybody realizing the benefits of this and it hedges against what that person was telling you, which is you got to be careful there. They might take it, you know, the wrong way, is start with framing it around the one thing that you all have in common financially, which is you work for the same company and you have some level of benefits that are the same. Now, every level may have some different benefits, but likely you have a whole bunch of company benefits that are all the same. And likely many people don't understand all of them.
I never did at Procter & Gamble, even in the Army. I never knew anything about any of my benefits.
Very common.
I had a salary and whatever.
That's from like, you know, I'll give you an example on 401k that I learned at our company a long time ago from another employee who told me this. And, you know, for example, if you want to do your 401k match, you obviously there's some percentage that the company matches usually. And of course you should take that.
Yes.
We encourage everyone to fully max out their 401k, which this year is $20,500. Not everyone can afford to do that, but you also could, you know, like you said, start eating less Miracle Whip and you could pull back, you know, cut your toothpaste open and you'd be shocked what you can afford to do. But on the 401k, so if you max out your, if you think you're doing really good and you like max out that IRS limit three quarters of the way through the year for whatever reason, you're not getting the company match for the last quarter based on how our company does the match. You have to actually put your money in to get the match. And now every company may be different on how they pay it out. And so that's a little tip to say, hey, like at the beginning of the year, make sure people are planning that they don't max it out before the last paycheck, or you're even in the last paycheck to miss one match would be unfortunate because that's hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so I just use that as a specific example to say, frame up the conversation around helping each other learn about and best leverage your company's benefits. A lot of companies have a deferred compensation plan, which is an amazing benefit. It allows you to put money aside tax-free and access it later when you're at a lower taxable income, a lower income, or lower tax rate. And so there's things like that. There's discounts and different things like cell phone discounts and other advantages. So there's kind of a mix of like hard and soft benefits. There's the actual medical benefit decisions and like people understanding how powerful an HSA can be, a health savings account, but it only works with a high deductible medical plan. So my point is, frame it around that one thing you all have in common, which is your company's benefits. And I believe that will allow your group to build up some rapport and trust around talking about financial topics. And then you'll have people like asking questions and saying, yeah. And then, you know, you might start even like a little, if depending on the size of your team, you could start an optional, like, hey, I'm not forcing anyone to talk about money, but like, it's a helpful topic for all of us.
Yeah.
And so let's start a group where, you know, once a month or every 2 weeks, we all eat lunch together and we kind of check in with each other about this topic. So I think there's a lot of ways a manager can approach it with their employees that doesn't come across as, you know, creating fear or like, you know, like, why are we having this discussion? Or it's personal. I don't want to talk about it.
So here's what's funny. What you just said, I did not expect you to say it. It makes total sense to me. It's so easy. And I hate to say this because sometimes people think I'm a cynic. I'm an unbelievable optimist. I think the world is fantastic beyond belief and it's getting better every day. No thanks to Mr. Putin. And I will tell you that I think if managers did that, they would be the only managers in the world that would say, hey guys, look, we're going to do a half an hour this Friday. I just want you guys to know what your benefits are. You know, if you're an individual contributor, you might reach out to HR and they'd say, well, let me refer you to somebody over in benefits and they might get back to you, whatever. If you're a manager, you say, hey, look, I'm going to give a talk to my team because I want my people to be fully taking full advantage of the benefits that this company pays for them. Let's not waste them. And I have a couple of questions or, you know, what's the website or what about this or what about that? Yeah. You could very easily have somebody come help. But honest to goodness, it sounds terrible. Nobody's doing this. Nobody.
Yeah. I mean, Mike and I are doing it, but you're right. We're doing it in the, you know, pod of our own company, but you're right. And what I found too, is when we do these talks, people love them. And then it opens the door. It breaks down that barrier of thinking money is a taboo topic. And they realize I'm comfortable talking about it. As long as you're comfortable talking about it, like, let's talk about it now. And you get like, when you start talking about money with people, I think you get to know them so much more quickly. And you get to know them on a deeper level. You start to understand their like underlying desires and goals and motivations in life. And I think, you know, also when you're having those discussions, like be vulnerable, right? So as a manager, talk about your own stuff. Don't go asking them questions. That's going to come across weird of like, hey, are you maxing out your 401k? Are you doing this? Just tell them what you're doing, right? Like start with yourself and be vulnerable.
And also say, don't be afraid to say, don't do what I did.
Yeah. And I talk about my mistakes all the time, right? Yeah. And I think that makes it more approachable because people see like, oh, you know, she has regrets about stuff she's done with money. And I also think, I mean, this may be I was going to say controversial, that's not the right word, but this may be kind of a funny angle, but when it's the manager initiating the discussion and talking about things that they're doing, when you have someone that you just assume that your manager is probably should be making more money than you. So when you have someone who you pretty much know is making more money than you, talk about how they live their lifestyle and it's less expensive and less nice than what you're doing day to day, I think it really can be eye-opening also.
Yeah, I told somebody when I was a kid, we never ate out. My parents were very, very, very frugal. I've since learned from my parents that, well, Mark, you understand that there weren't that many restaurants. Now there's 10,000 times more restaurants. But I maybe ate out with my parents five times in the 18 years I was being raised. Five times, right? Whereas most people, they drive through a drive-through without even think we're going to get food on the way home. Okay, so we've been going at this for a while now. Give me a couple of things that in your experience, not just from the podcast, but your own personal experience and from friends of yours who you've talked to and colleagues and so on. You've talked about the mindset, the why, know your why. Give us a couple of concrete things, and I'm not talking about toothpaste tubes. If you had to pick a couple of things that people can make first choices on, certainly 401k, if you're in a large organization, there's a matching program. You have to invest and get matched the maximum you can. What other two or three key things?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I'm going to double click on 401k, even though you just said it, because I'd specify max out your 401k forget the company match. Of course, take that. That's free money. You should never be leaving on the table. So, you know, if your company matches 5 or 6%, of course, take that. But there is an annual limit every year. Last year it was 19.5. This year it's 20,500 of how much you're legally allowed to put into your 401k. It's an IRS limit. I would max that out as early in life as you can, because you're getting the power of compound interest for longer. You're reducing your taxable income, so you're paying less taxes. And there's a number of ways you can access that money earlier if you need to, but you're building a quicker, faster retirement by doing that. And then at some point, you've funded as much as you need for your retirement, and you can start putting your money towards other things if you need to. But so I think, to me, the number one thing is your retirement. I think the other thing is having an emergency fund of making sure that, you know, you shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't be that some emergency kind of pushes you over the edge and gets you into like massive credit card debt. Speaking of credit cards, I mean, I would avoid credit card debt at all costs.
Yeah.
I would draw, you know, the big categories, because a lot of people's credit card debt is not important things. Sometimes it is, but the average American's credit card debt is crap they don't need.
Yeah.
That they have put on a credit. It's more clothes than they actually need. It's eating out.
Yeah.
It's decorative throw pillows for every season for their couches. It's just stuff that you could live without and you'd be fine with. And then, you know, another big thing is like people's big expenses are cars, housing, and food. Those are kind of the three big categories. And look at what you're spending on those categories and think about where you're at in your life and if you really need that and if you're willing to make the trade-off of, you know, what that's giving you. So do you need to drive an expensive car? If you can afford to pay cash for an expensive car, go for it. And you're maxing out your 401k and you've got an emergency fund and you're paying off your mortgage faster and you can still afford to pay cash for a fancy car, like, go for it.
Right. You know? If that's your thing. Yeah.
But a lot of people driving fancy cars can't. They're paying a massive car payment at a, you know, hot, whether you have an interest rate or not, you're paying a massive car payment and you're leasing a life that you can't actually afford to live.
I grew up in Arcadia, California, suburb of LA. My mom just had her 89th birthday a couple of days ago. And the house me and my three brothers and my parents lived in for the 18 years that I was there before I went to West Point was, I think, 1,200 square feet. And I didn't know anything, but I had a fantastic childhood. My dad worked, my mom stayed home, all of us went to school. I had no sense that I was deprived, that I wasn't wealthy. I didn't understand. I mean, I understood there were some people who were wealthier than us, a lot wealthier, right? We were probably lower middle class because my parents had four sons and we ate like banshees. We had 8 gallons of milk delivered twice. 8 gallons of milk delivered twice a week to our house, whole milk.
Wow.
We ate a loaf of bread at every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Wow.
Always. If you're hungry, have bread, put butter on your bread and eat bread. But my point is, you don't need that big house. And let me tell you, the real estate developers, they want you to buy that big house, right? And they have arrangements with the mortgage people to make it easy for you to do it. And that led to 2008 as well. So.
Yeah, it's called lifestyle inflation. It's no matter what you get, you know, you might at some point, someone's really thankful to have a 1,200 square foot house. And then once they get it and they get a little bit more money in their pocket, they realize they could afford a bigger house.
Right.
And somebody over there has a bigger house. And so they want a bigger house. And one of the best things you can do, just to use that, you know, example, is stay in that 1,200 square foot house.
A long time.
As long as you can, right? And look, if you have a bunch of kids and you want to move to a 2,000 square foot house, that's great. But there's economical ways to do that. And then there's ways that are living beyond your means. And so, and I say the last thing I'd be remiss not to say is number one thing to do, track your net worth. Even from when you, like right when you get out of school, when you're in high school, you can do this. Track your net worth. It may be negative in the beginning.
Sure.
You might come out of college and have, you know, 50 grand in student loans, whatever, whether it's negative or positive, it doesn't matter. If you are not tracking it, like we always say, what gets measured gets better.
Measure like what matters.
Yes. And so you have got to track your net worth, and that gives you data to know where you're at. And again, it might be negative, and don't let that discourage you, because every month you're going to see that that's either getting more negative or positive, and you're going to make decisions that push it in a positive direction.
Yeah. I'm not going to do X or Y because I'm focused on this now. And yeah. I'm not going to get that much out of X or Y, but it will definitely help me over here. And I won't miss X or Y, but yeah. I get benefit over here.
Yeah. And it makes you also tracking your net worth, makes you do things for the right reasons. So if you're ever working with a financial planner, for example, they would never, a lot of commission-based financial planners would never give you the advice to pay off your mortgage because that's less money that you're able to spend in the market, which is how they make their commissions. But tracking your net worth, as an example, you would see that every cent you're putting is reducing your mortgage debt. And so your net worth is increasing. You might not feel like you have as much money in the bank, but your net worth is increasing because now you've got money, you know, sitting in your home or whatever yeah. it is. And so I think tracking your net worth and then tracking your expenses, even if it's not long-term, but knowing what it costs you to live for a year is a really important number to not just know, but to then be able to make more lean and kind of attack and say like, hey, do you realize how much you're spending eating out? I mean, there's families who do this and realize they're spending thousands of dollars.
Every month.
$10,000 yeah. a year eating out. And when you look at the number that way, you're like, whoa, I'm all of a sudden incentivized to like rein this in.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I could talk to you about this for hours, in part because it's been so enjoyable for me to find these small things. And look, you know, I joke that I live in a very nice neighborhood. I have the cheapest, poorest looking house in the neighborhood, but it's also a $1.7 million house. And I can very clearly, Mike and I have talked about this. The company could pay off this house right now. Now, it's smarter for us to do some other stuff with that cash, obviously, but we are incredibly frugal in the company, in part because I knew that something like the pandemic would happen because we went through 2008. The company started in 2005, and then we went through 2008. And I was like, I am not going to have on my head, which I felt in my previous company, I'm not going to have on my head the salaries of all the people that we owe who give us such hard work. I'm yeah. not going to be in a situation where I can't pay them. I don't care what I need to do. In fact, yeah. during the pandemic, I found my personal self learning from my company self, from my manager tool self, because we just turned off all the credit cards for everybody in the company. We paused, we suspended them. And it was amazing how we were more profitable during the pandemic. Obviously, less revenue, but we were more profitable during the pandemic because we cut costs. And yeah. and as Peter Drucker says, you don't control costs, you cut them. So I've gotten a kick out of it. Why I didn't learn that in my personal life, I mean, I was never extravagant with anything, but I had to learn it from work, which I think is an interesting sort of migration for me. Like the moment I had responsibility for other people, I started realizing, oh boy.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes from during kind of COVID times was, don't let a good crisis go to waste, right? Which is I don't even know who said that, but it's Rahm been around Emanuel. For a long time. Who'd you say?
Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, he's impressed you can quote
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know him. And I was in the area when he said it. Not in the room, but I was in the area when he said it during.
Well, he probably said President it tied Clinton's. To like a much larger crisis.
Yeah.
But it's a great point in terms of like when you use that reference back to 2008 of you learn from in times of crisis, people get a lot more creative in terms of how they're able to approach yes. things and they rethink things in a dramatic way. And it's funny how quickly we kind of go back to like quote normal of getting like fat and happy. And
yes,
but there's so much you can learn through a time when you all of a sudden have less resources and less comfort in terms of kind of how you do things.
Yeah.
And realize that you can still be just as happy.
Yeah.
On less.
If you're listening to this right now and you've never been laid off before and you decided, if you could put a thought experiment in your head of saying to yourself, what would I do if my boss came to me and says it's going to be a layoff and you're on the list? If that causes you any financial insecurity, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Oh my gosh, I've got to get my resume. Oh, my network is not warmed up. I don't have, you know, we've talked about having 6 months. Now we've actually extended it to a year in light of 2008 and in terms of the pandemic, having a year's worth of cash available in the event,
yeah.
or at least mostly liquid. And if you can't survive that right now, if you're listening and you can't survive that, you've got to start putting more money away. I'll be blunt. Maggie's such a nice person. I'm not a nice person. So I'll be blunt. You need to cut your darn spending
yeah.
hard and fast and build that up. And then when the layoff happens, you will have an experience that I can't describe for you, but you will have the experience of people. You'll notice other people vibrating and panicking and so on. And you'll say, no, I'm good. And you'll start making decisions for the right reasons. Yeah.
Well, think about it another way too. If you put as much energy, not you, but obviously, you know, someone listening out there, if you put as much energy into trying to increase your salary, which many people are very focused on at some point in their career, if you put as much energy on that as you did, you're putting a lot of energy on that, instead put a lot of energy on trying to reduce your expenses.
Yes.
Because actually the fastest way for me to increase everybody's salary overnight, you can do it. You don't need to go ask your boss for a raise. I'm not saying you shouldn't if it's warranted.
Yeah, right.
But cut your spending to your point, because what you make is not what your salary is. What you make is your salary minus your expenses. And most people's expenses are a little too close, if not more than what they make. And you can reverse that overnight. It's in full control. So like, I can give everybody a raise overnight. Just quit spending money.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you're making more. And I always think of like, I could point to, you know, people that make way more money than me on paper, but I make more money than them because I spend less than them and I save more every year.
Yep.
And I think it's the combination of, you know, what you're making and what you're spending that people need to focus on, and that difference.
Yeah. And people, they confuse the things they have. And I may have mentioned this earlier. You don't own things. Things own you.
Yes.
They're in your head. You're thinking about them. You're thinking about the debt on them. They think about your credit card expenses and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. All right. I've got to tie this up because I could keep asking you questions. I will say this. I'm glad you mentioned Art of Happiness. It's a transcendent book, in my opinion. I recommend people read it. All of you know who listen that I'm a big reader. And I would be remiss if I didn't say, Maggie, thank you. You have given very generously to the Manor Tools community of your time and your knowledge. And I look forward to sharing with you some of the stories I hear. So folks, please feel free to write me, mahorstman@manager-tools.com, about your stories of fear and loathing because you weren't taking care of your finances, or the feeling you got or an experience you had when you got things under control. And Maggie, I'll be sure to pass them along to you. And don't forget, the reason Maggie is here is not just because she was a client and she became a friend, but also because she has a podcast called Friends on Fire. And I encourage you to give a listen because it's good. And at least one of the episodes is not bad because
one of our most popular episodes was when we brought you on.
Yeah, lucky me. And if you need me to come back, I'll be happy to come back.
Oh, thank you. We'll take you up on that.
Maggie, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mark.